Welcome to yet another episode of Innovation Odyssey. This time I have a very special guest, several ponds across from where I sit. Her name is Alexandra Vidyuk, and she is the CEO of Space and Deep Tech Investor. Welcome to the podcast, Alexandra.
Thank you, Ren, for having me. Excited to join.
Wonderful. So I always like to start asking my guests, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Alexandra, and I'm a space tech investor and entrepreneur. I invest in space tech with deep tech VC Alonic, and I'm also a CEO of venture builder Beyond Earth Technologies, and I run a blog for investors and founders which called Space
right.
Ambition.
So those are several hats that I hear. Maybe you want to walk us through your professional journey a little bit. What led you to go into space tech, and also why now?
Yeah, sure. So that's my, it's not a quite traditional journey to end up at space tech. I have a degree in physics, and when I graduated, I think that year, most of physics graduate went to work in banking and consulting. And I was the one who chose banking. So, and 10 years after, like, being in finance and banking between London and Hong Kong, I think I decided that I need to change something in my life. I think that was during COVID, and I think I had some spare time on my hands to reflect on my career, on my impact, on generally where it is all going. And I think when at some point I was looking at my pension plan, and my financial advisor said, okay, if you're going to like keep doing what you're doing now for the next 35 years, you're going to be okay. And that something changed, you know, inside me. I was like, what? I'm going to be in this office doing this job for the next 35 years? And I started thinking, and I think I started panicking a little bit, started kind of going through something probably which called like, you know, this like career crisis. So I left banking. I did a startup. I did fintech. I was a co-founder. It's a UK-based fintech/paytech startup. That was a good change. I realized that being in the world of, you know, founders, entrepreneurs, VCs, more exciting, more interesting, better suits my personality. But at the same time, like a year later, I thought that, you know, what I was trying to run away from, which is, you know, marginal changes, you know, almost no impact. I mean, when I say no impact, of course, we all have impact, but I want something bigger. I was like, am I fighting climate crisis every day? Am I saving lives? Am I pushing the boundaries of our civilization? And the answer was no. Yeah, of course you make someone's life better. But I think that moment of my life, I want something much bigger. So like I took summer off to think, what do I want to do? Started reading, joining, like, you know, watching webinars, podcasts, listening, you know, interviewing people, reconnecting with my friends from university, like from other people. And I realized that, you know, what I wanted when I was a kid is exactly what I want to do now. So I was a big fan of sci-fi. I liked physics. I liked math. I liked science. I was kind of always this geeky kid. And I was like, how do I join like that childhood dream with 10 years of experience in international like banking, you know, commercial side? And I thought that, you know, I started Space Ambition first because I was reading a lot. And then one of my friends told me, Alex, you read a lot. You have like a very good communication skills. You're a good writer. Why don't you publish it? Like, you know, you do research any week, like, you know what? Kind of you have group of friends. Yes, like just do it. So like the blog we've chosen, Substack platform, in 18 months, it grew up to like, now it's like, I think 11,000 plus. So it's a big, I think it's the biggest space tech Substack blog. You know, some of the topics, if you Google, then our blog would be like top 10 links on the first page of Google. So I think I write something which I kind of didn't see 2 years ago when I started reading about this. It's like, it's about plain English, 5-10 minutes read, something for people, busy people, executives, people from different industries. You don't have to be in space tech to read it. And I think this is something which what kind of I read for myself. Like that's the big book. Slowly, I was invited to join one VC to lead their space tech vertical. So I started bringing the deals, closing the deals. So I built my pipeline, I built my traction. Later, I realized that, you know, what's the difference between fintech founders and space tech founders? You know, all the fintech founders, ex-bankers, they know how to pitch, they know how to do presentations, they know, like, language, they know how to negotiate. And space tech founders and deep tech founders, they normally don't have the same background knowledge, they don't have the same cultural experience, so it's much more difficult for them. While we have so many good accelerators for deep tech, the very early stages are difficult. So that's why the venture builder was for me an obvious choice that, you know, I still want to help people. I want people, like, I know how to speak to scientists. I know how to speak to engineers, but I also know how to speak to investors. So bridging this gap, and also, you know, venture builder is a good thing because I don't have to focus on one project. I can focus on several. And that keeps me engaged and, you know, in different areas. And this is exactly something which I think suits my personality. So, yeah, sorry for a long story, but that's how it is.
That's what I like to hear. And one thing that I always wonder about venture builder, because I think as a mentor, sometimes you do that. Actually, you do that a lot, right? You, depending on what help they need, you're helping someone that's very early in the ideation process. Isn't it sometimes a bit discouraging because you put in, you know, it's the beginning stage and you put in so much effort and then it doesn't work out just because it's the beginning stage. And also you have the additional challenge of it being space tech. So do you have that?
So luckily, because our venture builder is not been around for a long time, we don't have any project which died out already or disappeared, so probably I would experience that maybe in the next year or so, but I know exactly what you mean, right? And it's I've done some advisory before as well, so it's kind of, it's a constant, you know, gamble, right? And people say like 99% of startups die. So yeah, it's sad, and I think a part of your soul dies with it, right? But you know, it makes you stronger, I think, as well. For the next
you
round,
gave me so many things to ask questions about. Your blog. Do you have any contributing authors, or is it just you?
I do have a team, and they're great. By the way, most of them are VCs, and I mean, all of them are VCs, engineers, and founders. So they they write not like abstract thing, but I think they write through their own lenses. We also have guest authors. Sometimes we have people who come to say, hey, you know, I'm passionate about production of electronics in space. Let's do like a joint article together. Or, you know, I want to talk about Starship, you know, what's going on, but in plain like English, people don't understand. Let me share. Of course, I moderate it and I check everything, the level of quality. So it has to be up to our standards. And once a month, I think we also do like a spotlight. So spotlight is, I normally try to bring investors in space tech. And the reason why I do it, because I think, first of all, there are not many of them. And second, I think there's a huge gap between people, like, you know, founders' assumption of what they think, actually real people who do investment. And I wanted to kind of bridge this gap, make it like less cultural difference. So kind of, and also ask, I mean, you know, I think the fascinating thing about space tech investors is there's no pattern. They all come from different ways, right? They all kind of ex-founders, ex-entrepreneurs, ex-bankers, ex-NASA engineers, people who made money on like something completely different, such as crypto. And like, you know, and people still join, kind of, you know, kind of converge to space tech. So that's interesting to see. I always ask this background, like, you know, where did you come from? So, and then people like because there is a big artificial barrier that people think, oh, to invest in space, you have to be a billionaire, you have to be Elon Musk, or you have to be Richard Branson, which I think it's like, you know, it's bad for our society. People think that. It's not, I mean, it's the same about, like, you know, founding a space tech startup. That's what people say. Oh, yeah, but you have to be a rocket scientist. Oh, but I'm not, I don't have PhD. I cannot do it, right? So, but if you look at the general population, 60% of space tech startups are software startups, for example, right? So, like, why do you think you have to be a rocket scientist, right? It's, and, you know, the industry not in a state when we build rockets. This is not like that. This is long time ago. It's not true, right? It's like the industry is so much diverse. And there's so many different business models we can explore. So, and I think something this is I always fight for. And kind of, you know, the more people will understand that, the better for
our planet. That's actually very interesting that you say 60% of space tech startups are software startups. I mean, you just broke down a few myths I had in my head right now. So I'm very happy about that. And do you, your readers are all over the world?
Yes, we have 106 countries. It's a US dominated, of course, because I think Substack is generally kind of US based readers, and it's also the biggest market for space tech. But yeah, I think I can't really say that's some specific segment of countries. It's very, very diverse.
Would you want to start a podcast on space tech at one point?
I was thinking about that, and people also mentioned to me this idea. I think that's probably on the cards, but yeah, it's a lot of effort, right? You know.
Yes, it is. It is. The VC that you work for, where do you get your pipeline from? Like, do you have a scouting mechanism that obviously you can share? Is there a special sauce to it?
Like, I think everywhere. So we do have several venture partners, and one of them, I think most of the VCs do exactly the same. I think we just follow, always talk to accelerators, incubators, have good networking with other VCs, share, kind of co-invest with people, see what they're doing, building relationship with universities and see what is coming out of universities there. I think the best recommendation of startups, we always say, come from other startups. And this is like, so many times I realized that, you know, founders recommend the best founders, right? Because if you ask about, like, you know, if you go to like accelerator or other VC, they're always biased because they always want to sell their own portfolio deals and they always want to help. You know, no one would recommend a very good round, right? If it's oversubscribed, if it's super secretive, if it's very hot, you will never have heard about it because, you know, it's not on the market, right? You always need to be linked to someone who either, you know, like say, oh, you know, we want, like, you know, then it's not about money, right? It's about your values. It's about your vision. It's about your connections, your value add to the table. Okay, so we have options, different VCs, like each can put the same check, but what else you bring to the table? Is it contacts? Is it exposure to different region? Is it expertise? Is that what exactly? And then how are you going to help us? Like, you know, so like kind of these questions, you know, are you going to, you know, pick up my phone, pick up my call, you know, like on Saturday and give me advice, or can you connect me to like next round investors, strategic investors? So there's kind of many questions. So kind of you always have to, I always feel like you have to fight for the good deals. And but you know, it's like, it's, you know, we fight for best founders, right? We fight for we need to find the good deals. It's very difficult now as well. But then later we have to fight. But the same for coming, like the same problem founders face, right? So how do they find the best VCs? Not just people who would like, you know, write the check and would never remember them after that, right? So, and like, you know, would never help. Or maybe even more, they would annoy them with quarterly reports and quarterly calls and like, you know, and yeah, it's always I think the same problem everyone has.
Okay, and of what you're building now, what part is it that you enjoy most?
I think the reason why I have three main projects now is because I can't do one thing at this stage of my career transition. I'm still new to space. I'm still kind of every day I consume a lot of information, meet new people. And I think I haven't kind of gained this critical mass of knowledge or networking where I can say, okay, this is the thing which I really like. This is the thing which I really like, want to continue for the next 10 years. I think I'm a bit more like in transition stage. So, and this is like this kind of portfolio of projects which I do actually really helps. So that's how I see it.
Okay. And, but if I were to challenge you that you can do whatever you want right now, you have enough information, considering the extensive reading that you've done and you don't need to do all of that, how would you respond to that?
Difficult question. I think the venture builder probably would be my kind of main choice. I think I like to work with founders. I like help them. I like the energy vision, and but at the same time, I think it's good. Like I thinking about one thing, 100. Like when you run a startup, you have to be 110% focused on that. Like all your spare time. Like, and maybe you have no spare time, right, when you do a startup. So for me, being a venture builder gives me exposure to different projects. And then you still kind of have the same focus. You still have the same like commitment, the same devotion, but you have different, so you kind of you have diversification of the topics as well, which I appreciate and enjoy.
Yeah, I can see that. And your personal journey has been quite diverse in terms of different countries. How do you think that your living in different countries has contributed to where you are and who you are now?
A lot, you know. It shaped me a lot, but also like you know, Singapore is my current base. It's my country number four, like where I spent long time. But I think if you think about travel or short business trips, that's maybe around 70 countries now. So I think it's exposure, and you know, people say that you can only build new neural networks based on the old neural networks, right? So the more neural networks you have and more diverse they are, the better your ideas, the better your kind of next future neural networks. I like to travel. It gives me exposure to different ideas, different cultures, different people, different perspective too. So I think it's kind of giving maybe more creative ideas, maybe more interesting exposure. But you know, you don't have to experience exactly the same as me to kind of have the same exposure, right? This is, now we live in a globally connected world. And, you know, I talked to you today, you're based in Switzerland, I'm based in Singapore. It doesn't stop us to exchange, you know, our cultural code, our like ideas or our kind of, so now it actually doesn't matter like that much. Yeah, it's definitely, the world is global, right? And, you know, if I want to create a product for diverse group of people, let's say I want to create a truly global, always think about it when I write, right? So I was like, okay, so what my readers from Europe will think about if I write this? Or what readers from Asia, or maybe like, you know, Southeast Asia, would it be biased for them? Or kind of, so it always helps me to understand, like, you know, how do I write to make sure that I'm not biased or I'm considering all different points of view? Obviously, I don't know all of them, but at least the ones which I understand. So that's kind of definitely helps me to, and kind of, so I, when I create products, I create them for my audience. My audience is diverse. So I do have to understand all of this.
Would you consider yourself an entrepreneur or an innovator? This is an open-ended question. You can define what that means. I love this question.
I would say both. Definitely entrepreneur. I think I have proven track record and this is something which I'm doing. Innovator, I think, depends how would you judge me. Did I create an innovation? Like, you know, how many patents I've got or how many, like, you know, new ideas, completely brand new products. Probably I don't have that track record today, but it's definitely my inspiration, aspiration. And definitely I would like to be called an innovator at some point.
And you are a woman in a predominantly man's world, which is the VC world. How has that experience been so far?
I think there's a positive side and there's a negative side as well, right? So I think the positive side is that people will always remember you, right? Like, no, like even I was like, I mean, all my entire life, I was in physics, study physics, being in banking, being like in space tech now. And I would say it's always dominated by men. It's good, like when you enter the room, like if you have 12 men and like maybe 2 women, right? People would always remember you, right? Because you were someone unusual and it's a good thing. And then it's kind of, you know, you stand out of the crowd. I think it's easier to get connected with, you know, like, you know, I always see other women, like, you know, on a conference or like in the meeting room. I can also kind of have this almost like unconditional support, right? So like, hey, I know you're here. I know how difficult it is. And I know, like, what you're going through. And, you know, I'm here for you anyway. I think this is, like, especially applicable for younger women. I think, like, the older generation might not have the same kind of, you know. But also, I respect that. I was like, you got there before all this support, right? So, you know, you don't have to support me because I understand you kind of, you went through, like, you know, much more than me. And this is, but, you know, in the same time, I think it's horrible to, like, you know, I think psychologically, right, we invest or we hire people, we support people who is like the youngest version of ourselves. And unconscious bias, it's unconscious, you know, behavior. We want to be surrounded by people like us for our comfort, for our, like, you know, psychological safety, right? This is something which we're not thinking about that. It's our subconscious part. So very little people, actually, when they make decisions about investments or hiring, they can, you know, trace this thought. And I also felt that. So, like, you know, when I fundraised seed round for my fintech startup that was more than 1 million. During that phase of my life, I had a big spreadsheet, you know, as you do when you're doing fundraising, like 500 VCs, and you go and trace each of them, cold connections, like, you know, warm connections, and, like, you know, make status, kind of mark status in the... And I think some people, like, I had a co-founder who was a bit older and he was male. So in some cases, the pitching to, like, top tier one VCs in Silicon Valley, they actually thought that I'm his PA and not a co-founder. So I was like, this is ridiculous, guys. Come on, this is, like, you know, 2021, right? Everything, you know, so many things, so many stages of development of our society went through, and we still kind of have this bias. So that's kind of unfortunately still happening, but it's I would say it's exceptional cases. But still, you know, some kind of I would like to see more female GPs. I would like to see more female founders and people making decisions. I think good things happening now. For example, you know, in some cases you need to have diversity on your board of directors, which is great. I think people are now doing some funds and VCs focusing on minorities, right? So, like, not necessarily gender, but also kind of other, like, you know, ethnics or some kind of other things. Good to see that. I think more people kind of trying to consciously think about it when they're making decisions. So it's a good changes, but I think still way to go. And I have a daughter that makes my decision making even like more kind of prominent, right? Because it's like, okay, so I'm not just doing it for myself, I'm creating the future for her, right? And like, it's like always say the same to my husband, right? So like, you do good, like, you try to be like, I try to do the best for our family, but also try to create the best future for her, right? And then you create it by creating, you can't change the world immediately, but you can create a small area around you, right? Like, your younger colleagues, your friends, your family, your kids, right? Like, what type of mindset they would have. And I think everyone should be responsible for that.
I second and third that. You're not working for us, we're working for our legacies, actually. This is what drives all the work that we do, right? And even space is an absolutely great example. You probably will not reap the full benefits, but your daughter would. And what does your daughter want to become?
She's two. She just started talking, but she knows the difference between Mars and Venus, and between shuttle and Starship and Falcon 9. So I hope, this is probably based on what I talk to her on, the books I read to her. I think at least my contribution to her future is about, I want her to have options, right? And this option should be better than options I had. That's at least this one is already good enough for me as a driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we conclude, what is your outlook for space? Not just by itself, but also about an industry that touches it. What is your outlook for both of that for, say, the next 5 years? Yeah, what would that be?
I don't think space is a standalone industry which has development, and it's kind of progressing independently of others. I think space is an enabler. It's a layer which kind of, touches many other industries, including sustainability, which is a very big thing now. Right? Everything what we do. So all the data which we have today, it's actually coming from space, right? Like all the greenhouse emissions and tracking and everything. Energy is another big thing, right? So enabling so many projects now, thinking how can we take advantage of space technology, especially to generate energy, right? And to kind of produce better semiconductors, which would be more energy efficient, right? Projects are doing it now, and I think this is great. Space and healthcare, pharma, biotech, right? So taking advantage of zero gravity research, taking advantage of deep vacuum, we can produce better proteins, we can produce better crystals, we can produce more complex molecules, which we cannot produce on Earth. How we can take advantage of that to build something, to cure cancer, to maybe use something for anti-aging, or even treat fertility, right? So I also saw these projects. So I think this is just maybe examples of how I see it, but I think it gives you an idea of more industries should be more aware about how they can take advantage of space technology to leap their own progress. And also, obviously we're talking here not just it's business, right? So we talk here about competitive advantage and long-term strategy, right? So where does it take it? So I think I would say that you mentioned 5 years. I think this is exactly the right timing when we talk about it now, because now we already at the stage where we see, the launch. It's easy, it's cheap. It's easier, it's cheaper. It's getting even more cheaper. And after Starship flying, which already reached the orbit, by the way, so probably we'll expect to launch costs go below $100 per kilo. Means anyone, if any school kid can save their pocket money to send something to space, right? So obviously it's exaggeration, but that's the level of cost we're talking about here. You know, now we have return capsules successfully landing by private companies in space. We have commercial space stations have been launched. We have like 4 companies are doing that. So that opens us, you know, opportunities for private labs in orbit, private hotels, private, maybe hospitals, private, whatever it is, touristic stuff, right? Private manufacturing spaces. So the kind of all of these things now possible is happening in the next 5 years, right? So it's kind of, and I think we expect to see a new wave of space tech entrepreneurs in this area. And the time when we had space tech entrepreneurs, you know, it's like similar to what we had during internet, right? The first entrepreneurs were all engineers and like programmers, coders. And then the other people realized, oh, actually, this is the place where I can make money, I can build business. And then the new wave came with like a proper, like, you know, very strong entrepreneurs. So I think it's exactly the same what's happening now in space. Like lots of new people outside of space industry coming and saying, oh, actually, you know, this is a great place to build business. This is a great place to generate new business ideas, business strategies. And as a byproduct, you also push in the boundaries of our civilization. This is amazing. I think this is like always kind of motivates people. Yeah. So yeah, that's my outlook.
Oh, that's great. And I think that as a CEO of Space Ambition, I can see you just do so much in the next 5 years and be at the forefront of maybe a fund which promotes entrepreneurs, not just in deep tech, but in other areas. It's, you're really democratizing space tech. When, and I think that is really valuable because it's that piece of the pie is bigger and it's accessible for all.
Yeah, thanks for kind words, Renu. This is great. And I think what, like, you know, having these type of chats and publishing them, I think this is super important and fun for us and also for other people. Right? I think thank you so much for doing this.
My absolute pleasure. And thank you for your time. And we will be in touch with all the latest and the greatest for Space Ambition.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today.